Hey everyone, welcome to The Withering Effect, episode 45. Today's date is May 17th, 2020, and I am Duds, or Duds Versus, known to the rest of the interwebs.
And I am Jimbo. You may know me as Jimbo Slice 23, and this week we have a guest. Beginning as a Minecraft modder and now a game developer for Mojang, King B-Dogs. Welcome to the show.
Hi guys, it's a pleasure to be here.
Now that we're at the main show, me and Jimbo have a question we want to ask you.
Early question.
Is it Mojang or Mojang?
I think there's like an internal debate about this, but I think the consensus it's Mojang. It's
okay.
Not Mojang. You would think it's Mojang, right? Because that sounds Swedish. yeah, I mean, I call it Mojang. I'm sure there are some people in the company who call it Mojang, but I personally call it Mojang. That's for sure.
Okay.
Confuses me even more now.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be an eternal debate that just happens forever.
Yeah, considering my name is...
I used to call it...
Considering my name is Jimbo with the J, you know, I call it Mojang. So.
Jimbo.
Didn't want to be Jimbo from here on out.
Oh, come on, Jimbo. Don't talk like that.
Oh, here we go. There you go.
You have started something you don't even know.
Probably.
Anyways, let's go ahead and talk about what we've done this week. I have not done a lot of Minecraft. I've hooked on Jedi Fallen Order from Star Wars. I have like 2 chapters left, so after this show, I'm probably getting on there and finishing the game. Then I'll jump to some Minecraft. I was designing a slime farm storage room in creative a little bit, so I'm not fully out of the loop yet, but this game has it's put me in a trance. If you're a fan of the movies, this game plays like a movie, so... It's like a whole new media for me to explore, and I've just been hooked. So I'm sorry I don't have a lot of Minecraft what we've done this week.
I've heard that game is really good.
Really fun. Good.
That's it's made by DICE, right?
It's made by Respawn.
Okay, right.
But they kind of work with that. I think they're using the Frostbite engine, which was designed by DICE.
Right.
But yeah, it's... I don't know how to explain it. A lot of people explain it as like a Dark Souls light. And the way it plays, because it does have the game difficulty sliders, and I'm playing on, like, the easy mode, because I'm basically only playing it, because if you play it like the easy mode, it focuses just on story. The enemies aren't overwhelming and stuff, so you really truly get to feel like a big and bad Jedi. So it's like, yeah, that's what I want to do. I don't want to be screaming at my computer monitors as I die for the 17th time on the same level. I'm totally immersed in that game. Which stinks for my Minecraft content, but I'll be getting back to that soon. Jimbo, what have you been doing this week?
A little bit of Minecraft. Last night with Carl, we jumped on there and went on the Ripple Effect server to see what we could do because we were bored. I'm trying to stay fresh for 1.16. I don't want to burn myself out ahead of time, so I'm trying to stay off the Minecraft a little bit just to, you know, jump into it pretty good when it does start up. But
yeah, because when 1.16 comes out, we're all going to be playing that like nonstop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got ideas and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to.
Oh, yeah, I know. I've been planning for the Ripple Season 3 for a month or two now.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, King B-Dogs? Have you been doing anything with Minecraft you're allowed to talk about?
I mean, this week in terms of work, I've been doing some, you know, bug fixing and some work on the next update. Of course, can't talk about it, but yeah, some work on the next update. In terms of like stuff outside of work, I've actually, weirdly enough, I randomly started watching videos from a YouTuber called Call Me Kevin, if you've ever watched him. He's been playing like, well, not recently, but I saw some videos of him playing like old Harry Potter games from like PlayStation era, and that made me start watching like the entire Harry Potter series again, since I haven't watched it in like 10 years or something. That was kind of cool. Like, it's like a bit of a nostalgia trip. And they're pretty, you know, they're really good movies. I know that, like, there were some people, I remember when, you know, because I read books when I was very young, and I watched the movies as soon as they came out. And there were a lot of people that kind of were like, oh, you know, it didn't have this part of the book. And they're not perfect movies, but they're pretty consistently great. Like, they're pretty good movies. And especially for a series that is 8 movies long, I don't know if I've seen many movies or movie series that are like that consistently good. I haven't watched like all the Marvel movies. I've heard they're pretty fantastic, but I don't know. It was really cool, and I've been enjoying that.
Yeah.
Also played Age of Empires 2.
I haven't played Age of Empires 2. I played the first one, but that was a little while ago.
Yeah, it's been a while.
My roommate is a huge Harry Potter fan, so I constantly hear that theme music in the background all the time. And I'm not the biggest Harry Potter fan, but even I can agree, those movies, even like the first one, hold up to the test of time.
Mm, yeah,
definitely.
So you're watching it and it doesn't feel dated, which is what I love. I hate the most when like I'm watching a movie and I see something and I'm like, oh yeah, they don't have cell phones to call somebody to make this a lot easier.
Yeah, yeah. I like the fact that also like the series grows up with the audience. Like it gets darker as it goes, and that's always been really cool.
100% agree. Some guy created like Hogwarts in Minecraft. Like,
right.
It's just a huge map, and I've been wanting to download that and explore it just to understand the scale of it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of people like recreating like lots of sets of movies, or like I'm pretty sure there is someone who's like recreated Middle Earth from Lord of the Rings, which is just insane. But yeah, like just I don't know how people have that much talent and patience to create that stuff. It's just insane to me in the best possible way.
Yeah, a friend of the show, Whitey Whitey, was creating a set from Lord of the Rings. I forgot which one it was.
Maybe one of the cities?
It's the big one with like the spiked mountain coming out the side of it.
Oh, Isengard.
Yeah.
Wait, with the eye as well?
I think they did the eye one at one other point too.
Okay, right. Yeah, because I know the big like spiky tower is like Isengard.
Whitey just yelled at us at Discord for messing it up, but I wanted to give a shout out. This is an awesome build. What do you guys say? Let's jump into the news, because we've got a lot of questions for our main topic, and then there's not a ton of news, even though what me and Jobo wrote down is a lot. So this week we have Snapshot 20W20A and B. B was just a bug fix, I think, for a game crash.
Yeah.
Yeah. But 20A added the game mode switcher debug menu and some more nether advancements. Now, I saw in your Twitter you were showing off the game mode switcher. Mm-hmm. That's just hold F3 and tap F4 to, I guess, cycle through the different game modes.
Pretty much, yeah. And then it has kind of like a remembering feature where it remembers the past game mode you had. Yeah.
Now, how did that come about? Did you guys just constantly get aggravated accidentally switching into creative mode when you're trying to do something else like we do?
Yeah, pretty much. In particular, when we were working on the Piglins, one of our developers, Henrik, he wanted to be able to quickly switch between spectator and survival. And because of that, we started working on some sort of solution to switch game modes easy. And I just kind of, there was one day where I was like, I'm just going to prototype this. And so I prototyped a sort of GUI feature. And of course, in the past, like I've worked on a mod called Orbis, where, you know, I've got some experience like working on this sort of like, I guess, extra creative solution. So I felt like maybe I'd have some experience in trying to solve that problem. And I think it came out pretty well. It seems to be pretty positive across the board from players.
I
definitely think it's one of those, sorry, throat's just full of morning voice. It's one of those quality of life updates that it's not this big, huge thing, but it's one of these small things that when you've been using it for a year, you're like, man, how did I ever not use this?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I'm already thinking now, the amount of times I would go to a spot and then I'd have to type in spectator mode so I could take a thumbnail shot for a video or something. Now I can just quick tap, tap, take my screenshot and then tap back in. It's going to be an awesome change.
I mean, even just thinking, like, before spectator mode existed, like, that's crazy. Like, yeah, there's definitely, I would love to see if we can squeeze in more of those little things, like, you know, in the future as we develop the game, just, like, more quality of life things, because sometimes it can be hard to develop them, because, you know, they take away time in development from, like, the content editions, but still, I think they're important, and they add a lot to the game, especially, again, for, like, content creators and map makers. Yeah,
but it's the fact that you guys do these things that keeps Minecraft around. I mean, think about it. It's probably one of the oldest games to still be at the top of the games list.
Yeah.
So these little quality of lives, they're awesome changes.
Yeah, definitely. It's very, very interesting. Like, you know, I don't even say this in a bad way, but, you know, I remember, like, years ago when I was, you know, playing Minecraft, I was, like, wondering, like, how long is this going to last? Like, how long are people going to stay interested in this game? You know, even, like, only 5 years ago, and it doesn't seem to be dwindling. People really love this game, and like, I mean, that's obviously awesome, both for me as a developer and even as a player. But it's always interesting trying to think of, like, you know, why do people love this game so much? And I mean, hopefully it's, you know, because we you know, put a lot of effort into maintaining it and making sure it's still a fun and fresh game. But I think there's also something very special about the game, and I think you know, we've captured something special, and that's really awesome.
I really do think we're going to pluck this tiny bit of imagination out of your mind, and we're going to put it on screen and just let you run with it is really what sells the game. I know a lot of people are saying, well, we want World Generation to be like this, but you guys are very much well, you can do that, but we're going to give you this blank slate.
Yeah.
And with little tiny hints of what you can do, and we want you to make that world. And that's, to me, that's the best thing in the world. Because I went to school for architecture degree. Right. I don't use that degree at all. I repair industrial electronics. So the fact I get to come home and play a game and do something I really like that, it's just awesome.
That is really cool, yeah. And I mean, like, going back to our conversation about, like, creating, like, little emergent narratives in the game, I kind of almost think of it like, of course, Minecraft has a lot of parallels with, like, Lego, but also even just, like, in terms of the story side of things, it's like the game gives you little Lego pieces, in a sense, to build a story. It gives you it doesn't try to direct you in any way, it just gives you pieces that you can play with, like a toy box. And then you decide what you want to do with it. And I think that's the most powerful part of it. And I think that, of course, there are games that come close to this, but I think the fact that Minecraft is so abstract in the way that it gives you these pieces, that's what makes it so powerful. Whereas some other games try to give you a more guided experience, which is still fun. Don't get me wrong. Like, I love, you know, I'm, like I was explaining before, I love storytelling games. I love games that are, like, almost on rails, where they just tell you a good story. And I love that, but I also love and appreciate what Minecraft does, where it's so abstract that it does not try to tell you what to do. It gives you a world, it pops you into a world, it gives you some pieces, and you go crazy, and that's awesome.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Before we switch over to Jimbo's news-related stuff, I wanted to talk about, there are a couple of advancements that the name itself made me chuckle. So, Country Load, Take Me Home. Using the compass on a lodestone. What? By the way, lodestone's now my new beautiful favorite block.
That's even awesome, though
it's going to be a pain to decorate with it. But I love how it gives you a 3D texture while still being 2D.
Right,
and the fact, I live in North Carolina, so if you yell country road, somebody's going to yell back, take me home. Granted, we're not in West Virginia, but we're close enough where it happens.
I'm pretty close to West Virginia.
Yeah, right on the other side,
right
of the river.
Across the river, yeah, in Ohio.
So I don't know if you know Kojo, another developer in the team. He was the one who actually came up with that name, and I'm very thankful because it's awesome. It's such a good name.
Yeah,
tell
perfect.
Him the Withering Effect thanks him.
Oh, I love all the puns on the advancements. All the fun puns.
Yeah. The next one I did was Oh Shiny, which is when you're distracting angry penguin with gold. Because I immediately thought of that Family Guy episode where you're just like, ooh, piece of candy. Ooh, piece of candy. As he's walking, I was like, I'm totally doing that.
Yeah.
There's a lot more advancements and bug fixes and stuff. We'll have the link to the Minecraft website in the show notes. But Jimbo, you've got some more Minecraft news you want to cover.
Yeah, we have some changes for 20W20A. The bullseye advancement now unlocks when hitting a bullseye on the target block from at least 30 meters away. The series dedication advancement is now awarded for obtaining a netherite hoe. Obtaining blackstone now also counts for the stone age advancement. Breeding striders now counts for the parrots and bats, and now required for the 2x2 advancement. Technical changes. Cool. Shulkers with AI can now summon with rotation. Added throne item pickup by entity advancement trigger. Added player generates container loot advancement trigger. Added item used on block advancement trigger. Remove safely harvest honey advancement trigger. And miscellaneous trigger changes. Location got a new property, Smoky, which checks if location is closely above the campfire. Entity properties got new properties, which vehicle... Properties, vehicle, and target targeted entities with matched vehicle or the entity targeted by... Why can't I say this? I can't do the last one.
Because this is the earliest we've ever recorded a podcast.
Yeah, but I make it to the end and I screw it up. Like, really?
Yeah. I mean, out of all those, I'm assuming, like, the smoky property is just so you don't spawn a player on top of a campfire. Mm. And entity properties with vehicle and targeted, I'm assuming that has to do with the Strider. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. The thing is that I wasn't part of those changes. I haven't really looked into the advancement code too much, so I wouldn't really be aware. That's mostly like the tech team that kind of works on that stuff.
Totally fine, because we don't know half this stuff anyway. Our listeners understand. We're just kind of spreading the news, and if they know, they can message us on Discord and be like, hey, dum-dums, this is what it means. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
Jimbo, you've got some listener comments you want to bring up, right?
Yeah, I got a comment from Groova Guy. It's an idea. Just wanted to get our thoughts on it. He asks, what if you play music around plants to help them grow faster? Thought that was pretty interesting.
Kind of like how bees will pollinate, right?
Mm. Yeah.
It goes back to that old adage where, like, depending on the kind of music you play, we'll have a plant grow faster. Like, if you play calm music, they grow bigger and stronger. If you play, like, death metal, heavy they metal. Don't do so well.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah, there's real-life tests that show that it helps some. And as soon as I heard that, I was like, wow, that's not bad. I kind of like it.
I think it'd be very interesting if it was, like, a specific plant that did that. Like, in all plants, but there'd be, like, a special plant that is, like, attuned to music and something.
Yeah.
Would be very cool. Like, imagine the new twisty vines and weeping vines. If you play pig step near them, they just start growing.
Yeah. Or if there's just a certain rare disc you can get a hold of that does it for all plants, it's just really rare.
I definitely like the idea of trying to implement the music in more, because I think that's one of the more, I shouldn't say forgotten, because Pigstep came out and that kind of like broke everyone. But yeah, implementing the jukebox in different ways could be very cool. But let's jump into this week's Discord ad. This is from RobleJC, so go ahead and take it away.
What's going on, everybody? I'm RebelJC, and I would love for you to get involved in our Discord community. Whether it's voting for Block of the Week, sharing your thoughts and opinions on Minecraft, or just chatting with like-minded listeners, the Withering Effect Discord has something for everyone. Join today by following the link in the show notes.
All right, thanks for that ad, RebelJC. And remember, Rebel also has his own podcast. If you guys want to go check it out, I believe it's called Dig Straight Down. So hopefully we can get Carl, remember, kind of put a link to that in the show notes. But now it's on to the segment I'm the most nervous for, because, guys, we're changing the block you chose in front of a million developer.
This will be fun.
This week, we asked you guys to vote in Discord on which of the following blocks Jimbo and I discuss. Your choices were the beacon, bookshelf, and stonecutter. And before Jimbo announces the winner, I will say we closed the votes, but you guys kept voting. So what you think is the winner might not actually be the winner.
Yeah, they're definitely trying to sabotage the block of the week. We got people in there trying to sabotage the system, but it's not going to work because we got a producer named Carl.
They're not used to it closing early.
Yeah, but the winner this week is... Bookshelf. Congratulations, Bookshelf. It's actually... rooting for the bookshelf because there's a lot of changes that can be implemented. But before we get to the changes, I have a few things about the bookshelf. It is crafted with any type of wood. It takes 6 wood planks and 3 books. It's found naturally in villages, woodland mansions, and strongholds. And in the stronghold library, there could be up to 233 bookshelves. Which I did not know that. Jeez. Yeah, that's a lot of bookshelves.
Me either.
It can be mined with silk touch, preferably with an axe, but without silk touch, it will drop 3 books instead of the bookshelf itself, and primarily serves to enhance enchanting with any enchantment table.
All right, so the improvements. My easy first thing that came to mind was bookshelves should hold books.
Mm-hmm.
Should be a specific chest for books. And I thought that's obvious, but and how would that affect other parts of the game? And I realized it could be really cool. So if you have a bookshelf GUI, maybe you have a spot at the top for just three normal books that you would craft bookshelves with, and this would allow enchanting setups to kind of be dialable without having to do any kind of crazy redstone. You can just kind of take those books in and out as you needed, and that would allow that, but also have maybe like a chest GUI underneath it where you could store your enchanted books. Maybe you could also have the amount of books determine the texture that would show up on the outside of the bookshelf. So like if your bookshelf's empty, just an empty texture, there's no books on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought maybe the way furnaces work, how they know once it's melting, it changes to that the fire glow texture.
Yep.
Maybe that could be done with bookshelves. Carl also mentioned that being able to use different wood types to change the way bookshelves look so they didn't all look oak would be a cool thing too, and I kind of agree. What do you think, King Bee Dogs? How abstract are we?
I like the idea of like the book, like based on the slot that it's in, it actually changes the visuals. That'd be pretty cool, like because especially for builders, mm-hmm. right? Especially if you could potentially change the cover of the book in some way, so you could like change the visuals of it when you place it inside mm-hmm. the bookshelf.
Maybe what is it? The fire protection book is a red book,
right?
On
yeah.
the texture.
Yeah, that'd be very cool. And I've always been a fan of like it would be cool if like the different wood types gave you different visuals. There is a debate there though. It's like for example, you know, with chests, like if the different wood type affected the visuals of it, would it get? I don't think it would, but the question is, would it get confusing? It's like, oh, is this a special type yeah. of chest? But no, actually, it's just a normal chest. It just has different visuals. So it's like it's a question of is mechanics more important than the visuals? Because of course you have like ender chests and they have a mm-hmm. different visual because they represent a different mechanic. But yeah, I don't know. Like I don't know the answer to that, but that is one of the challenges when it comes to like having different visual variations with different wood types. Something like doors, they don't really. I don't think the problem is as overt because they all relatively act the same. Whereas something like chests, ender chests, and normal chests, very different. So yeah, it's a thought, but it is cool. I would love personally to have different colored bookshelves. It'd be really cool.
Yeah, another issue with those different type of bookshelves is you couldn't mix and match the wood to create a bookshelf. You'd have to have that one type.
Exactly.
Very true. And we know like that building an enchantment setup, that's something you start almost day one. So you're just grabbing whatever wood you have around you. That went better than I thought. We didn't get called dummies.
Not at all. Cool ideas.
But now let's get into the chunk of our show, and that's going to be straight up questions for you. We got a lot of people who asked a lot of different questions, so what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to get through at least one question for everyone and see where we are on time. If we're still good on time, we'll keep asking questions. If we're late in the show and we need to go ahead and wrap it up, we do have the post show for our Patreon exclusive. Now, this pre and post show and our first half stack are all free to everyone. We want you to kind of get the feel and see if it's worth you guys giving any kind of money to access these shows. We don't want you to feel like you're getting stuck behind a paywall. So we want to make sure you guys like this stuff before we get too far into it. And we'll save some questions afterwards for that. Like, I've got one that's not Minecraft related I really want to talk about. So, Jimbo, do you have a question you want to talk about first?
Yeah, I'm going to start off with, how did you become familiar with coding?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a weird self-fulfilling prophecy because I basically learned programming from Minecraft. I think it was about, I was probably like 13 or 14, and, I started making mods for Minecraft. The first mod that I ever made was a mod called, Minecraft Advanced originally, and that ended up being called King's Mods. But that basically added like just a bunch of random things, like added like sand creepers, added giant creepers, baby creepers. It added obsidian tools, dragon tools, added dragons in the nether. It added
red dragons,
hellhounds. yeah, it was basically back then, like as a kid, you just like, what is cool? And then you just add it. Like, I didn't really mm-hmm. think about like design or anything. I was just like, this is awesome. I want obsidian tools. And obsidian tools are basically, they worked like stone tools in terms of like efficiency. But they they would last forever. They never broke. So they could mine as fast as stone tools, but never broke. So that was kind of cool. And that was interesting.
Yeah.
There was also, like, other weird mechanics, like, runes that you could throw. So you could make, like, stone runes, and it would, like, you would throw them, and it would create a cobblestone where it landed. I don't know why, but it was just me messing around with things. But yeah, like, basically, it just ended up being me one day finding a tutorial on how to decompile Minecraft, which sounds scarier than it is, but basically it's just Minecraft is made in Java, and when you compile the game, there is something called an obfuscation process where they obfuscate the names of the code. So something called, like, let's say Snowball would end up being called A. So you wouldn't know what it is at all. Like, you could decompile the code, and then you could see the code, but it would just be A. So, okay, what is this A? And then what happened is the Minecraft community and the modding community came together to create something called a deobfuscation map, where essentially it would, every version, it would see, okay, I think that this thing called A is actually a snowball. So then it had a mapping which would go A to snowball. And then you would go through a deobfuscation process, which is like automated script that would pretty much change all those names into something that was readable for you. And so there was a whole bunch of tools that were made to basically do this, where you would just kind of hit a button and it would decompile the game, it would deobfuscate it, and then you could edit the code, and then you could reobfuscate it in order to actually play it in the game. So yeah, so that was a tool that I used to just deobfuscate it and look through the code, and I just basically saw, like, hey, I see that there's, like, a chicken here, and it seems that it drops feathers when it dies, because it's in, like, a death method or something, and I just changed feathers to diamonds, and I changed, like, the number from, like, 1 to 9,000, and so my first quote-unquote mod was a chicken dropping, like, 9,000 diamonds, and that was fun.
Sweet.
I bet.
Yeah, and yeah, from there, I didn't know anything about programming. I didn't know what anything was. I just saw, like, the name Diamond, and I saw a number, and I just changed things, and I kept changing things. I never really looked up, like, an official tutorial on, like, how to program until, like, much later, like, years later. And yeah, I just kept iterating, kept learning by myself, and then eventually I started working on the Aether mod, and I,
which
you know,
is crazy, by the way.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, a lot of it, you know, I attribute a lot of the success to some really awesome people that are around me, because I kind of found a community on IRC called Aristocraft, and there was just awesome modders, like, from all over the world who were working on Minecraft mods, and I kind of just, like, brought together a group, and I was, you know, talking to them and, like, asking questions about, okay, how can I do this, and at one stage I learned a lot, and I was just like, hey, do you guys want to make this mod? And then we made the Aether. So it was really cool.
And now, awesome. and now you're like Neo from the Matrix. Everything just makes sense when you look at it.
I mean, a little bit, yeah. But I think the awesome thing about programming, and sometimes the frustrating thing, is, like, no matter how much you learn from programming, you're always learning something new every single day. You never quite get comfortable with it. Well, I think you get comfortable with it, but you never know everything, because programming is always changing. Like, the hardware is always changing, the software is always changing, and there are always so many different, like, I guess, like, development philosophies and development paradigms that change the way you think about how you're approaching, like, content development or software development. You do get comfortable, get a lot of experience, and I think in some senses, like, you learn how to solve a lot of problems, but there are so many problems in software development, so it's impossible to know everything, which I think can be really exciting, because it means that, you know, every time you're working on it, you're learning something new, and that's fun.
Yeah.
Cool.
Moving on, this one kind of leads to your tweet that we ended up doing a show about, and Omni is asking, which boss fight is your favorite?
That is a tough question. I think in the Ender Dragon is my favorite. I wouldn't call it a very strong fight in terms of, like, design. I think it's good, like, don't get me wrong. I think that there are improvements to be made, obviously. But I think what I really like about the Ender Dragon fight is that it uses the environment to its advantage in terms of the design. Like, you have these, like, obsidian columns, and you know, you gotta, like, shoot the crystals, and it has something to it that is not just, you know, constantly attack the boss until it dies. It's something more. And of course, you got like the Endermen everywhere, and they kind of pose like a bit of a challenge. Like, oh, you got to avoid looking at them. And then, of course, like, you can't forget, even though it's not part of the fight itself, but just the context of the fight, the fact that you're going to the end, and then you see the end poem after. There's something much more impactful about that entire fight than something like the Wither, which is, you know, still awesome. But it doesn't, to me, have the same impact as something like the Ender Dragon. I really think that is a very strong fight, and it has a lot going for it.
I agree. Mm-hmm. I like how the external forces around you are also dictating the fight. Mm-hmm. Like, when I fought the Ender Dragon recently on my single-player world, I just planned on spawning next to the platform right next to the island. It turned out I was like 40 blocks away.
Right.
And I was like, man, I'm glad I remembered to bring Ender Pearls just to get onto the main fight. It's like, mm-hmm. there was already something I needed to be prepared for before I even fought the dragon.
Yeah.
Yeah, the void definitely. Is definitely something to look out for, too, just to get to the dragon.
Yeah,
it's a very imposing environment. And it, you know, it's not something you're used to. Like, you don't really get exposed to the void unless you're like in creative mode or something. So if you're just playing in survival for the first time, you see like, okay, there's literally just darkness below me. that's terrifying for the first time. So that's really cool. I really like it.
Oh no, it's terrifying the 50th time too. Don't worry about that.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I don't know how many times I've got a pinky cramp trying to build an Enderman farm over the void.
Mm-hmm.
What's your next question?
Is there a certain part of the game that you're working on or that you work with, or do you get to get involved everywhere?
So I think the philosophy in general in the development team, at least the gameplay team, is that, you know, you in general get to work on the things that you're most passionate about. But it changes. Like, you kind of have like hats, I guess, like metaphorically, where it's like, okay, this week I'm going to put on the bug fixing hat.
Oh.
And that's, you know, that's my job this week. And then maybe midway through, you're like, okay, well, actually, I got to do some prototyping. So I'm going to switch to the prototyping hat, and I'm going to try and work on that. But when it comes to like content development, you know, if you're super passionate about something, like I was quite passionate about the idea of the Strider, as long as like, you know, that passion is seen and no one else, like, I guess, has a conflicting interest of working on it, we're very happy to let people in the team work on things that they love. And I think that creates some of the best content. So that's really awesome. I really like that.
Mm-hmm. I agree, because now you're not forced about working on something you're like 50-50 mm-hmm. on. You're working on something you're like, yes, this can work, and I'm going to show you guys how. And I love the fact that they just kind of are free will. Like, you know what? You have an idea. Go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see how it turns out.
Breaks up the monotony a little bit.
Yeah. There's definitely a culture of like prototyping in general. Like, you know, if you have an idea, unless like, you know, there's deadlines or you know, things are coming to a head, you know, maybe we have to work on some things. In general, if you have an idea, we're very happy for us to prototype that and just like see how it works. And if it doesn't work, that's fine. We learned something. We're not opposed to it. That's what I really like about both the role and the company in general is very open with like, let's try ideas. Let's see if this works. And if it doesn't work, it's not a loss. It's a win.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. Kind of leading off of that, we've got a question from J-Man who goes, what aspect of the game has been the hardest to develop for?
I think anything related to the quote unquote like tech community, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of like mob farms and things surrounding that, you know, that's a part of the community that I wasn't very exposed to in the past because, you know, even in my mods that I made, they were very like adventure focused and like combat focused and exploration mm-hmm. and all these sort of things. And it's like, I never even really, you know, used Redstone. Like that's not my playstyle. And outside of Redstone, I definitely never built a mob farm. That's just not something I did. And it's not a part of the community that I was exposed to either. So I didn't understand them. And in the past couple of months, you know, as I've been in this role, I've been trying my best to research and understand both the community and, you know, what this side of the community really wants. And I found through my research that what they want is they want a challenge. They basically want a set of like game rules or I guess laws of the game that they want to use their advantage to create like some sort of positive effect for them, some sort of positive outcome. But they want to make sure that that is a challenge. Like, there are mob farms that are too easy, I found. There are some that people feel are overpowered. And it's not that, like, they don't want those mob farms to go. Definitely not. They just want them to be more like the reward should meet the input. So the challenge of building that farm should be greater in order to match that output of, like, how much items you get or how much reward you get from it.
Yeah, it's crazy to think, because people were, you would assume, hey, easier farm, the better for me. But now you have this community pushing back, saying, no, we want the complete opposite. We want to put in the work.
Yes.
To make this crazy farm.
Yeah, and I think that's, of course, there's a little bit of controversy around the Wither Rose change of, like, being able to spawn on Wither Roses, like the mobs. But I think in general, most people have, you know, just said, like, hey, this is the right change because it made farms too simple. Like, you basically had the same solution for every single farm, and that wasn't fun for them. That's not a challenge. It's not, it doesn't really, like, you know, it doesn't make your brain tick in any way. And I think that's what this community, that part of the community wants. They want fun puzzles to solve. And if you just give them the answers, that's not fun at all. Yeah, that's been really interesting. It's been really tough because, again, it's just not my playstyle, and it's not something that I'm necessarily interested in, like, on a personal level as a player, but I think that has been both challenging and really rewarding to understand them and figure out what they want.
Well, the fact that you and Mojang in general listen to the community so much is, again, precedent on why so many people love this game. You kind of understand your voice is going to be heard. It's just a matter of time before it gets figured out how to work it in there.
Yeah, and I think in general, like, there is sometimes, I guess, the idea floating around that Mojang doesn't listen to players, but you'd be amazed how much we do listen. I will, like, every single snapshot, I go onto YouTube, and I look into newest of, like, that snapshot, like Minecraft Nether update or whatever, and I will watch, like, so much. I will watch people who only have, like, 3 subscribers, and I will just listen to every single person. Sometimes it's too much. Like, sometimes I should just, like, relax and not get too crazy into it, right? But there is a balance, and I think just the fact that I'm willing to listen to everyone, you know, not just the big content creators, just everyone that I can, because I really want to understand what players like and dislike about the snapshot, or you know, what the general sentiment is. This is really useful information for me to make the game better.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Jimbo, you got another question?
Yeah, I got a question from the noobs. Are there any mechanics currently in the game that you would like to change or remove?
That's interesting. Phantoms would be the top one. I think I'm not a big fan of how beds work. The biggest problem that I like beds as a concept. I think the problem that I have with it is that, you know, you always skip night now, and it's been like that for years, of course. And it's kind of part of the game, and I think it would be really risky to change it. But what I don't like, especially with Phantoms, now that they were introduced, is that it's like, now that Phantoms are in, you're even more encouraged to never experience the night. Like, you always should sleep. There's just no downside, or sorry, there's no upside to venturing out and, like, braving the night. You get no reward from it. You're better off just sleeping. And I really, really dislike, like, heavily dislike that. I think it's, it doesn't make sense. The game should encourage players to step out of their comfort zone and reward them from stepping out of their comfort zone. But none of that happens with beds, and none of that definitely happens with Phantoms. So there's something deeply wrong there. I don't know if we will ever solve it. I mean, I'm sure we'll definitely eventually address Phantoms in some way. I think that will happen. The question is when. You know, it could take a long time. Yeah, I just think something's wrong there. And, like, I love exploration, and I think that I think the fact that there are certain parts of the game that, like, kind of inhibit you from really engrossing yourself in the exploration is a bit concerning to me. Like, even the fact that with beds, you're constrained to one location. And if you sleep, like, let's say you venture out and then you sleep, you lose, you know, track of your base. So, of course, I guess you could argue now with lodestones that's solved a little bit, because you can have a lodestone at your base and then you can sleep somewhere else and then return to your base. But I still think it's not enough, because if you're traveling, let's say, 10,000 blocks away from your base, is it really reasonable for us to ask a player to have a base, like, that far away, venture out, and then come back? you know, like actually walk all the way mm-hmm. back there, even with horses. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I do think that it should be challenging to travel. It should be challenging to explore, but I think the reward should be extremely great. And I think there's a lot of little mechanics everywhere that could be tweaked to make that more interesting.
You hit on two things perfectly for my single player world. Early on, what I would do is I'd stay up at night and I'd hunt mobs just for the XP so I could get enchanting going. But the second I knew a phantom was getting ready to spawn, I slept through the night and I went, oh man, that's a wasted night to get XP. So I agree. And I've always thought phantoms would be cool as kind of like a replacement for bats. If everyone keeps saying cave update. Well, if there was a cave update, imagine like phantoms being like having their own temple or whatever in there, and you'd have to fight phantoms off in there. Mm-hmm. I always thought that was good and cool. And number two is the long travel. Well, in this world, I've tried to stay out of the Nether as possible because I know the Nether update's coming and I want it to be fresh for that. Mm-hmm. So my rule is I have to travel to a destination on land and then travel back without dying. And if I could get to my location and back without dying, I'd set up a command block that would allow me to teleport to that location and back.
Yeah.
And there were a couple times I was going over 5,000 blocks and I was like, I don't have an elytra yet. This is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I missed Nether travel.
And that's a problem. Like, you have to essentially cheat your way just to have a fun experience. And I don't think that's right. I think that's a failure on our part. I don't think it's like such a severe problem that the game is not fun. I just think that it is something that I would urge for us to look into at one point, because I think there is something that we can improve there. And with the phantoms, I love the way they look. I think they're a really cool looking mob. I think they deserve to have something that is really fun around them, or at least give you this like amazing reward for like challenging yourself against them. It's just not there yet. And hopefully eventually we can look into it. Again, definitely no promises. We don't know when we would look into it, but I would love to eventually, you know, give it some thought for sure.
Yeah.
Before you get on to your question, I just wanted to mention how, you know, on multiplayer servers, we always add the data pack for one person sleep to where none of us have to go through the night. And I think your take is very interesting of how, it does take a lot away from the game, not going through the night. Mm-hmm. In that challenge of getting your work done with that, you know, that issue being at night.
Yeah. So I think like the ideal outcome of this would be that you can still perfectly like skip the night completely. But I think that players should be rewarded for not skipping the night. I think that would be the ideal situation, because then at least those players who don't like the night, like they just think it's scary or it's boring. It's like, yes, skip it. We have no problem with you doing that. But if you challenge yourself and you do go out in the night, you'll get something really interesting.
Yeah, I like that.
I think that'd be cool.
I like that too. I got a question from Agent Paint. Might have been better a little earlier, but how often do community suggestions and feedback get discussed when developing an update?
Probably a lot more than you might imagine. We pretty much every single snapshot, we compile together as much feedback as we can. And we have like discussions pretty much every morning on a work day, just like, hey, you know, this person said this, they felt like this was, you know, could be improved, or they said, oh, this was actually super fun and we really enjoyed it. We look at the feedback almost consistently, like constantly. And even myself, like I said, like not necessarily everyone does this, but I know that quite a lot of people in the team, you know, after a snapshot, they'll go out and watch YouTube videos, they'll listen to community members, they'll ask questions on Twitter, they read through Twitter threads, they'll watch streams, you know, we're always watching. You might not see us, but we're always watching and we're always listening. And even though, you know, the feedback might not be addressed immediately, it might take, you know, it could take a really long time. We're always discussing these solutions. But of course, with so many requests from the community and with so many different takes on the game, we can't do everything. It's just not possible. Yeah. So we have to prioritize, okay, this one is going to add the most to the game, and this one is going to have, like, you know, the most positive outcomes for the game. So that's kind of how we prioritize. We know we can't do everything, so we make sure that we address the things that add the most or resolve the most.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Jimbo, you're up.
Has there been a project or projects that you've been so motivated to get to that you just couldn't wait?
It doesn't necessarily have to be at Mojang, because we know you're going in there since January. And you've had the Aether mods and the Orbis mods.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll answer this in two ways. I think, like, outside of Mojang, it would definitely be Orbis. That was definitely one of my most, like, the biggest passion project I've ever worked on. It is not as popular as the Aether, of course, and that's mostly down to the fact that I just didn't finish it. but it's it's the technology behind it is really, really interesting and really cool, and how, like, it could change the way that developers make content for, like, mods or anything. So it's really cool. I really like that, and the fact that it empowers artists to basically create procedural content with no coding at all, like, that's awesome. But in terms of inside Mojang, I guess there's something that I'm working on now that I can't talk about, that I have been very excited for, like, extremely excited for. So stuff is happening.
Well, I can't wait to figure out what you're excited for.
Yeah.
Speaking of the Orbis mod, I'm not sure if this is, like, when I saw what your Orbis mod was, I immediately thought of the way bastions were being created. Is there any link to that at all, or is it just a happy coincidence that they're both dealing with procedurally generated dungeons and stuff?
There's no link. The bastions use something called jigsaws in the game. I don't think the community really interacts with jigsaw stuff much, but it does something quite similar. But the thing that Orbis does very different is that Orbis allows you to basically create, like, procedural content within, let's say, a room very, very quickly, and you can do it without any programming whatsoever. Whereas something like bastions, it is done in, like, you know, in Minecraft blocks and everything, and you kind of create, like, a structure file, but it's still quite a lot of programming surrounding it to make sure that it places correctly in the world and everything. Orbis is much more like you just create a structure and it just works, like, it just generates in the world naturally. And that's, like, the upside of that. So yeah, that's a difference in technology, but in terms of, like, I guess the outcome, very similar. I mean, they're both procedurally generated solutions. And I didn't work on the bastions, that was Kojo, but he did a fantastic job. Like, it's from what I'm aware, the biggest procedurally generated structure in the game. And it came, like, the effort into making it such a varied structure that, you know, and it just has so much going for it. It's a controversial structure, because I know, like, there are some people who are like, oh, it's too ruined. Like, I feel like I wish I could see it, like, less ruined, but I still think that for the goal of that structure, it came out extremely well.
Yeah, I like the look of it and the different variations. There's different types of them.
Yeah, it's like every time you walk into one, it's new to you.
It's like a maze.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, definitely.
Jimbo, you got another one?
Yeah, do you think there's been a tangible shift towards prioritizing Bedrock for the parody?
Yeah, I think I think this stuff was happening before I joined, but I think definitely since I've joined, like, we've focused a lot more on ensuring that there is, like, great parity between the two different platforms. And even myself, I am actually working on Bedrock and Java at the same time.
Cool.
I implemented the Striders with another Bedrock developer on Bedrock while also implementing it in Java, which was, like, fantastic. So cool. I've never actually programmed in C++ before that. Like, never learned C++ at all, and that was really cool to be able to learn a new programming language to work on that platform and collaborate with that team. And, you know, we're very like close together, and we make sure that, like, we're always having discussions and conversations about, like, I noticed that this thing is a bit different on Java, or this thing's a bit different on Bedrock, like, how can we make these come closer together? And I think going forward, you'll see that these updates are really, like, great in terms of parity, and I hope that that trend continues, because it seems it's really exciting, really, really exciting.
Definitely. I've got a smaller question from Viperous Tuna, and I didn't think much of it, but it actually could be a really cool thing. Will there be any shield-specific enchantments in the future?
I don't think we've really had any conversations about that, but it's definitely an area to explore. It'd be interesting. You know, I think in general, combat, of course, is being evaluated in different ways by Jens right now, or Jeb. with the combat snapshots. So, you know, I think that would be probably a better question for him because he's probably thought of that sort of stuff. But it is interesting. Like, you know, there's a lot of different things you could do with shields with enchantments. I think that could be really exciting. You know, like maybe, I don't know, so maybe like just even like successfully blocking with a shield that's enchanted that like sets the entity on fire or something. You know, there's all sorts of interesting things you could do. So that's, yeah, it's definitely a cool area to explore.
We're getting close on our time. Let's get two more questions in there. Jimbo, you got one more?
Yeah, you mentioned the Orbeez mod. I did check this out. It seems like a very convenient way for generation and to help build creatively. And I was just curious to how this came about, how you came up with that idea.
Right. It basically came down to while I was developing Aether 2, I realized that, you know, we had these big ambitions to create like super crazy dungeons. And that came from essentially we have some really brilliant artists in that team that had come to me with like these awesome like concept art of like all these dungeons and like how they would be laid out. And I realized that no matter how hard I tried to translate those concept arts into like actual generated dungeons in the game, it just the translation wasn't good enough. There would be like I guess artistic vision lost between that point. And to me that was unacceptable because they were so cool. So I started working on, originally it was called like, I think it was called like the structure generator or something. It was like some generic name. And the idea was, how can I get to a point where I can just hand a tool to these artists and they make the whole dungeon themselves? And I don't have to intervene at all. Like they can literally get in and design the procedural content for like a dungeon room. And I don't have to step in at all. Like they just own this thing. This is their dungeon. They understand it. They have the concept art. They know how to create it. And that was the vision. And I got extremely close. Of course, there's still a lot of things that, like, if I were to return to that mod, that I'd have to do to like fully realize that vision. But it got extremely close to that sort of concept. I mean, in the end, it basically, like, currently the way it's implemented, you it's basically 3D Photoshop with procedural generation. It's got like layers where you can work on a structure in layers, and you can like hide layers or delete layers, so you can like place blocks and then you can hide that layer and those blocks will just disappear. And like it's super powerful. It's got like procedural like conditions and stuff where like you can link layers together and you can say this layer will only generate if this layer generates, which has like a 50% chance to generate. So you can just create crazy things. Like you can create entire dungeons with it. It's really, really cool. Unfortunately, I don't have time anymore, which sucks. But it's like that was the reason why we worked on that mod, just so that like the artists could get in and make awesome work to empower them.
Crazy.
Yeah, I really enjoyed what you did there. I was watching some of it, and I want to get my hands on that mod. Actually, I haven't got to download it yet, but it looks cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Me and Jimbo aren't much for outside of vanilla. But seeing some of the stuff you've worked on, it's like the things we've talked about are available. We just don't know about it because we're not into the big modding community.
Right, yeah. And that's definitely understandable. Like, I think even for myself, like, I tend to avoid mods, which is a bit ironic. Not because they're not great. Like, these mods are awesome. The amount of work that the community puts into it is amazing. But I like to play an experience that is, I guess, like, reliable. Like, I don't like to have to wait for, you know, mods to update or staying behind on previous versions. Like, even Orbeez, as awesome as it is, it's only updated to 1.12.2. And it's like, that's extremely old now. And the fact that I have to go back in order to play that mod is not an enjoyable part of the experience.
One more question before we wrap up the Withering Effect. What is your favorite part of an update?
I guess development-wise, or like literally what is like my favorite?
It could be like the release date. It could be when you're just talking about ideas. It could be when you finally figure out that one piece of code that's been missing for a while.
I think I'll answer this in two ways. So the first thing is like with the development process, I think my favorite part is when things start to click. I remember like when we were developing the Nether update, like as you know, like I came in kind of like midway, which was a bit interesting for me because it's like suddenly all of these crazy cool ideas are coming in, and like I had no idea about what the Nether update was going to be, and then I just saw all of it. I'm like, oh my god, this is so cool. But even then, like, we were still trying to figure out, like, you know, we had an idea for a vision of the update, but we still had so many problems to solve. Mm-hmm. And then there was suddenly sort of like a week where it's like, oh, things are just clicking into place, and it feels like, oh, this feature interacts with this feature in this way, and like it has like this synergy that is like really powerful for the player experience. And it's just that moment where you're just like, okay, I can actually see this is going to be a cool update, this is going to be fun for players. Because before that, you're just trying to solve so many problems and you're not sure, you're like, is this going to be a good update? We don't know. And then you know, you work as hard as you can to make sure that it's a great update, and it just clicks. And that is rewarding, definitely rewarding. And of course, I enjoy seeing all the reactions to that as well. In terms of like, I guess, what is my favorite like feature from an update? I think for the Nether update in particular, I would definitely say the piglins, just because of how much depth they have to them. I mean, yeah. I guess on a personal level, I would also say the Strider, because I worked on it. But I think the Strider doesn't come close to the piglins in just how much depth it adds to the game, and like the feeling, the atmosphere of like the, you know, this whole race in another dimension that you can interact with such depth to it is really cool.
Yeah, the piglins to me feel like, yes, we had zombie pigmen in the Nether before, but the piglins are like, okay, now we took a mob and we gave it some storytelling ability that you can play with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So here's another chapter to your story you can create.
Exactly. And the player can interpret the piglins in whatever way they want. Like, you know, they get to interpret them as like warlords or something, or maybe misunderstood creatures. Like, it's up to the player, which is so cool. Yeah. Like, you know, they could be like, I'm going to aid the piglins and I'm going to kill all the hoglins around them. Like, you know, it's up to you. And that's really cool.
Yeah. But I think we're out of time for the main show, guys. Don't forget, we have Drinking Our Milk, which is our Patreon exclusive post show. But since it's our first Patreon show, it is free for everyone to enjoy. So we're probably going to be answering a couple more questions and hanging out over there. Jimbo, do you want to go ahead and read us out, though?
Well, before I do, you want to ask about the 1.16 release?
Oh, yeah. So me and Jimbo have a bet on a diamond block. The first 9 diamonds we come across in our new season is about which one of us is going to be closer to the full release date of 1.16. Jimbo said May 12th. 5 days
ago.
And I've got June 12th. Can you give us a definitive answer on when it's going to be released?
Right. Yeah, I didn't want to say this, but it's going to come out.
Wow.
Oh, man. What?
That's okay.
Can't believe it.
All right. It makes sense.
Yeah.
I'm so glad you got to tell everyone.
Now that we know who the winner is, I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not that crazy walrus, I can tell you that.
Yeah. People will be excited. Okay, I'll read us out now. I'm all excited now. If you like the show, you could share it with all your friends and on social media. If you listen on Spotify, follow us. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, leave us a nice review. Doing any of these helps the show reach out to more listeners. If you'd like to get in contact with us, send an email to podcast@rippleeffectsmp.com. Tweet us, leave a voice message, or join our Discord, where you can have a chat with everyone who works on the show and fellow listeners. All the links are in the show notes.
Yeah, the show has been brought to you by Jimbo and myself, but also our digital producer, Carl. He helps make sure the show ends up where it should be. Man, we are struggling reading outros today. The amazing music you hear in the intro and outro was created by the one and only Decoy. Everybody's social media info can be found in the show notes. And thank you again, King Big Dogs, for hanging out on the show. You're going to be in the post show with us again, too. So thank you so much. It was so awesome having you on the show.
Not a problem. It's been awesome.
All you guys who are listening, you have also been awesome. Thanks for getting withered with us. You should probably go drink your milk now.
Bye. See you guys.
Bye.